"We were a little rushed," Belgorath told him.
"I will send word to the cook, then," Ateska said. He went to the door and spoke with one of the red-garbed guards posted outside. Then he came back. "While we are waiting, why don't we share that information I was talking about? I had heard that you were going to Ashaba when you left Malzeth. Then you suddenly surface in Malsina, and now you are halfway across the Magan to Darshiva. You people certainly move around."
"He already knows what we're doing," Silk's fingers said to Belgorath. "There's no point in trying to hide it."
"Please, Prince Skeldar," Ateska said in a pained tone. "Don't do that. It is very impolite, you know."
Silk laughed. "Either your eyes are very sharp, General, or advancing age is making my fingers clumsy. In point of fact, I was merely suggesting to Belgorath that we had made no secret of our reason for coming to Meloria. Kalzakath knew why we were here, so there is no point in being coy about it." He gave Belgorath an inquiring look, and the old man nodded. Silk's face grew serious, even bleak. "We went to Ashaba in pursuit of Zandramas and King Belgarion's son. Then we followed her across Karanda and on down into Jarot in northern Tkalanta. Her trail led to Malsina, so we followed her there. Then we came back to the continent."
"And you are still on her trail?"
Ateska asked intently. "More or less," Silk lied smoothly. Then he sidestepped the issue. "We discovered at Ashaba that Irvan is totally mad now. I am sure Kalzakath will be interested in that. Anyhow, Irvan's under the control of a demon lord named Nahaz. Zandramas has raised another demon lord named Mordia, and the two are fighting each other in Darshiva. I'd think a long time before I invaded that region, General. Nahaz and Mordia might prefer not to be interrupted."
"What happened to Minga?" Ateska asked suddenly. "I thought he was the one who was raising demons."
Silk smiled wryly. "Minga was actually a Kandam priest named Harrigan. He was Irvan's underling for centuries."
"Was?"
"I'm afraid he's no longer with us. He met a little green snake named Zith, and he lost interest in things shortly after that."
Ateska threw back his head and laughed. "I had heard about your pet, Your Excellency," he said to Sadi. "Do you suppose that she would accept a medal? Heroine of the Empire or something?"
"I don't think she'd really be interested, General Ateska," Sadi replied coolly. "Besides, if somebody tried to pin a medal to her, she might misunderstand."
"You have got a point there," Ateska said.
He looked around a little nervously.
"You do have her confined, don't you?"
"Of course, General," Velvet assured him with a dimpled smile. "At the moment she's taking care of her babies. They're absolutely adorable. Why don't you show them to the General, Tadi?"
Ateska hesitated. "Some other time, perhaps." "All right, General Ateska," Belgorath said. "We have told you what we have been doing. Now, I think it's time for you to share a bit of information with us." "We have not really made a secret of our activities either, ancient Belgorath. The Emperor's forces moved out of Malzeth, and we used Magaren as a staging area. I was instructed to lead the advance elements of the army down the Magan and to occupy Farah. The idea was to cut off Zandramas's reinforcements out of Darshiva so that Irvan's army could annihilate the troops she had in Peldane. Then we planned to fall on Irvan. heavily. After that, we were going to cross the river and deal with whatever forces Sandra Moss had left.
Oh, good plan, Silk said.
Unfortunately, it did not work. We have got Darshiva cut off, but one of Zandramas's underlings went down into Gandahar and hired a sizable body of elephant cavalry.
Ateska frowned.
I think I'll speak with His Imperial Majesty about that. I don't really object to mercenaries, but the elephant herders of Gandahar are just a bit unselective when it comes to hiring themselves out. At any rate, there was a battle in Central Peldane yesterday, and elephants did what elephants usually do. Irvan's army fled, but instead of running back toward Silanta, they outflanked the elephants and the rest of the Darshivan army, and they are driving straight toward the Magan. If they get across into Darshiva, I will have my work cut out for me. I will have demons and grolems and kandam and hounds and elephants and kerans and a whole army of Darshiva to deal with.
He sighed mournfully.
This is not, I'm afraid, going to be the short, easy campaign I had anticipated.
Why not just let Irvan and Zandramas fight it out? Silk suggested.
Policy, Prince Keldar. The Emperor does not want to appear timid or powerless, and he most certainly does not want any army in Meloria, except his own, to win any kind of a victory. It sets a bad precedent, and it might give others certain ideas. Meloria is not as monolithic a society as it might appear from the outside. Overwhelming Imperial force is the only thing that holds us together.
Now, I approve of the reasoning, Silk agreed. Stability is good for business.
Speaking of that, Ateska said, one of these days, you and I are going to have a long talk about beans.
Are you buying or selling, General Ateska? Silk asked impudently. Let's get down to cases, gentlemen, Polgara said. General Ateska, what are the Emperor's plans concerning us?
That is for him to decide, my lady, Ateska replied. His Majesty does not always confide in me. He was, however, quite distressed about the way you chose to abuse his hospitality in Malzeth.
He knew where we were going, Geryon said flatly. And why?
That is likely to be one of the things he will want to discuss with your majesty. It is possible that the two of you might be able to work out an accommodation of some kind.
Possible, but not very probable.
That is up to his imperial majesty, isn't it?
The fog had lifted, but the sky over Darshiva was heavily overcast. As Geryon stood in the bow of Ateska's ship, he caught a scent that was hauntingly familiar. It was a compound of damp rust, stagnant water, and the musty smell of fungus. He peered ahead and saw a forest composed of dead white snags. His heart sank. Ateska quietly joined him.
I hope your majesty is not offended with me. I seem to be making a habit of apprehending you and your friends.
You are only following orders, general, Geryon said shortly. My quarrel is with your emperor, not with you.
You are a very tolerant man, your majesty.
Not really, general. But I don't waste my time holding grudges against people who are only doing what they are told to do. Ateska looked toward the Darshivan shore, less than a mile away.
I expect that overcast will burn off by noon, he said, smoothly changing the subject.
I wouldn't count on it, Ateska, Geryon said somberly. Did you ever visit Tol Mishrak?
military people don't have much reason to visit uninhabited ruins, Your Majesty.
Tolmishrak was not uninhabited, Geryon told him. The Kandam were there, and the hounds, and other things I can't even put names to.
Religious fanatics, Ateska shrugged. They do things for strange reasons. I am told it was an unhealthy sort of place.
Geryon pointed at the Darshevan shore. You're looking at another one, I'm afraid. I know that Malsines are almost as skeptical as Tolnedrans, so I don't know how much you'll believe of what I'm going to tell you. Do you smell that peculiar odor in the air?
Ateska sniffed, then wrinkled his nose. Not very pleasant, is it?
Tolmishrak smelled exactly the same way. I'd guess that the cloud cover over Darshiva has been there for a dozen years at least.
I find that a bit hard to accept.
Look at those trees.
Geryon pointed at the snags.
What do you think it would take to kill a whole forest?
Some kind of disease, I suppose.
No, General. Seedlings would have sprouted by now. And there's not even an undergrowth there. The trees died from lack of sunlight. The only thing growing out there now is fungus. It rains from time to time, and the rainwater collects in pools. The sun doesn't come out to evaporate the water, so it just lies there and stagnates. That's a part of what you're smelling.
I seem to smell rust, too. Where is that coming from?
I really don't know. At Tolmishrak, it came from the ruins of Torak's Iron Tower. Darshiva's shrouded in perpetual gloom because it's the home of the Child of Dark.
I have heard that term before. Who is this Child of Dark?
Sandramas. At least for the time being. Are you really sure you want to land your troops there?
I have my orders, King Belgarion. My troops are well trained. They will build a fortified enclave on that shore, whether the sun is shining or not. Then we will wait for the Emperor. He has a number of decisions to make. Not the least of which is what he is going to do about you.
Chapter 17. They waited on board Ateska's ship while the soldiers went ashore and began to build the enclave. The Malorian troops were quite nearly as efficient as the legions of Imperial Tolnedra, and in a very short period of time, they had cleared several acres of ground and erected a neat, orderly city of tents. It was surrounded on the inland side by breastworks, catapults, and a deep ditch bristling with sharpened stakes. A palisade of sharpened poles lined the river's edge, and a number of floating docks extended out into the river. It was mid-afternoon when Geryon and the others disembarked and were escorted to a large guarded pavilion in the center of the enclave, and politely but firmly asked to remain inside.
"Have you ever been able to contact Belden?" Silk asked Belgarath in a whisper.
The old man nodded.
"He's working on something."
"Oh, I hope he doesn't take too long," the little man said. "I expect that once the Kath gets here, he'll decide that we need slightly more secure quarters. Probably a place involving stout walls and locked doors." He made a sour face. "I hate jails."
"Don't you think you are exaggerating, Prince Keldar?"
Tinedra asked.
"Zakath's always behaved like a perfect gentleman."
"Oh, of course," he replied with heavy sarcasm. "Why don't you tell that to all those Murgos he crucified on the plains of Haga? He can be polite when it doesn't inconvenience him too much, but we've seriously irritated him. If we're not gone by the time he gets here,
I expect he'll show us just how irritated he really is.
You're wrong, Prince Keldar,
Arion said gravely.
He just doesn't know what he's supposed to do yet, that's all.
What's that supposed to mean?
Back in Tol Murgos, Ceradus told him that he was going to come to a crossroads in his life. This is it, I think. Once he makes the right choice, we can be friends again.
Just like that?
More or less, yes.
Bulgra, would you please make him stop that? The tent was familiar. It was a Malorian officer's pavilion, with the usual red carpeting, and furniture which could be easily disassembled. They had been housed in this same kind of pavilion many times in the past. Geryon looked around without much interest, then he sprawled on a bench.
"What's the matter, Geryon?"
Tsinedra asked, coming over to sit beside him.
"Isn't it obvious? Why don't they just leave us alone?" "I think you worry too much,"
she told him. She reached out and touched his forehead with one little finger.
"Your friend in there isn't going to let anything happen that's not supposed to happen. So stop brooding about this. We are supposed to go to Kel, and Zakath could not stop us. Even if he brought his whole army back from Tol Murgos and piled them in our path."
"You're taking this all awfully calmly."
"I have to believe, Geryon,"
she replied with a little sigh.
"If I didn't, I'd go insane."
She leaned forward and kissed him.
"Now, get that grumpy look off your face. You're starting to look exactly like Belgarath."
"Well, of course I am. He's my grandfather, after all."
"The resemblance shouldn't start to show up for several thousand years yet, though,"
she said tartly. Two soldiers brought them a supper, consisting of standard military rations. Silk opened one of the metal pots and looked inside. He sighed. "I was afraid of that."
"What's the trouble, Keldar?"
Tsadi asked him. "Beans," Silk replied, pointing at the pot.
"I thought you liked beans."
"Not to eat, I don't." Because they had not slept the previous night, they retired early. Geryon tossed restlessly for a while and then finally dropped off. The following morning, they all slept late, and Geryon emerged from the curtained-off compartment he shared with Tsenedra to find Silk pacing up and down restlessly. "Finally," the little man said with some relief. "I thought everybody was going to sleep till noon."
"What's your problem?" Geryon asked him.
"I need somebody to talk to, that's all."
"Lonesome?"
"No. Edgy. Zakath's probably going to show up today. Do you suppose we ought to wake Belgarath?"
"Why?"
"To find out if Belden has come up with a way to get us out of here, naturally."
"You worry too much."
"My, aren't we complacent this morning?" Silk snapped.
"Not really, but there's not much point in chewing off all of our fingernails over something that's out of our hands, is there?"
"Geryon, why don't you go back to bed?"
"I thought you were lonesome."
"Not that lonesome."
"Has Ateska come by this morning?"
"No, he's probably fairly busy. He's going to have some sort of campaign mapped out by the time Zakath gets here." The little man flung himself into one of the folding chairs. "No matter. What Belden comes up with, we're very likely to have at least a regiment hot on our heels when we ride out of here," he predicted. "And I hate being chased."
"We've had people chasing us ever since the night we left Faldor's farm. You should be used to it by now."
"Oh, I am, Geryon. I still don't like it, though." Perhaps an hour or so later, the others began to wake up, and not long after that, the same red-garbed soldiers brought them breakfast. The two men were the only people they had seen since they had been confined in the pavilion.
They spent the rest of the morning in desultory conversation. By unspoken agreement, no one mentioned their present situation. About noon, General Ataska entered the tent.
"His Imperial Majesty will arrive shortly," he announced. "His ships are approaching the docks."
"Thank you, General," Belgorath replied. Ataska bowed stiffly and went back out. Polgara rose to her feet. "Come along, ladies," she said to Zenedra and Velvet. "Let's go make ourselves presentable."
Sadi looked down at his plain tunic and hose.
"Hardly suitable for an imperial audience," he said. "Do you think we ought to change?"
"Why bother?" Belgorath shrugged. "Let's not give Zakath the impression that we take him seriously."
"Don't we?"
"Maybe. But we don't need to let him know about it." Not much later, the Emperor of Meloria entered with General Ataska and the Chief of the Bureau of Internal Affairs. As was his custom, Zakath wore a plain linen robe, but he had a scarlet military cape draped across his shoulders. His eyes were once again melancholy, and his pallid lips expressionless.
"Good day, Your Majesty," he said to Garion, in a flat, emotionless tone. "You have been well, I trust."
"Tolerably, Your Majesty,"
Garion replied. If Zakath wanted formality, Garion would give him formality.
"Your extensive travels must have been fatiguing," Zakath said in that same flat tone. "Particularly for the ladies. I will see to it that your return journey to Malzeth is made in easy stages."
"Your Majesty is very kind, but we are not going back to Malzeth."
"You're wrong, Belgarian. You are going back to Malzeth."
"Sorry, I've got a pressing engagement elsewhere."
"I'll convey your regrets to Zandramas when I see her."
"I am sure she'd be overjoyed to hear that I'm not coming."
"Not for very long, she won't. I fully intend to have her burned as a witch."
"Good luck, Your Majesty. But I don't think you will find that she is very combustible." "Aren't you gentlemen being just a little silly?" Polgara asked then. She had changed into a blue dress, and she sat at a table, calmly mending a pair of Arion's socks.
"Silly?"
Zakath snapped, his eyes suddenly flashing. "You are still friends, and you both know it. Now stop behaving like a couple of schoolboys."
"I think you go too far, Lady Polgara,"
Zakath told her in a frigid tone. "Really," she replied. "I thought I had described the situation rather accurately. You are not going to put Garion in chains, and he is not going to turn you into a radish. So, stop trying to bully each other."
"I think we can continue this discussion some other time," Zakath said curtly.
He bowed slightly to Polgara and left the tent.
"Wasn't that perhaps a trifle abrupt, Lady Polgara?"
Zadi asked her. "I don't think so," she replied. "It cut through a lot of nonsense." She carefully folded the socks she had been mending. "Ariand, I think it's time for you to trim your toenails again. You are cutting your way out of your socks faster than I can mend them." "He's gone back to being the way he was before, hasn't he?"
Garion said sadly.
"Zakath, I mean." "Not entirely,"
Polgara disagreed.
"Most of that was opposed to conceal his real feelings."
She looked at Belgorath.
"Well, father, has Uncle Belden come up with anything yet?"
"He was working on something this morning. I can't talk to him right now because he's chasing a rabbit. We'll get back in touch after he finishes his lunch."
"Can't he concentrate on business?"
Oh, come now, Paul. I've known you to go out of your way for a fat rabbit on occasion.
You don't!
Zinedra gasped to Polgara, her eyes wide with sudden horror.
I really don't think you'd understand, dear, Polgara told her. Why don't you bring me your gray dress? I noticed a rip in the hem, and I've already got my sewing box out.
They waited out the remainder of the afternoon. After supper, they sat around talking quietly. Silk squinted toward the door of the tent, beyond which the guards were posted.
"Any luck with Belden yet?" he whispered to Belgarath.
"He's working on something. Something fairly exotic, I'd imagine, knowing Belden. He's still hammering out the details. He'll tell me the whole thing once he gets it put together."
"Wouldn't it be better if the two of you worked on it together?"
"He knows what he has to do. I would just get in his way if I tried to stick my oar in, too."
The old man stretched and yawned. Then he stood up.
"I don't know about the rest of you, but I think I will go to bed."
The next morning, Geryon rose quietly, dressed and slipped out of the curtained-off chamber, leaving Zinedra still asleep. Durnik and Toth were seated at the table in the main part of the pavilion with Belgarath.
"Don't ask me how he did it," Belgarath was saying. "All he told me was that Serratus agreed to come here when Toth summoned her."
Durnik and Toth exchanged a few gestures.
"He says he can do that," the smith translated. "Do you want her to come here now?"
Belgarath shook his head.
"No. Let's wait until Zakath is in here with us. I know how much it tires her to project her image over long distances."
He made a face.
"Belden suggests that we let the conversation get to a climax before we send for her. Belden has urges in the direction of melodrama sometimes. We've all talked to him about it over the years, but he backslides from time to time. Good morning, Geryon."
Geryon nodded briefly to each of them, then sat at the table.
"What's Serratus going to be able to do that we can't?" he asked.
"I'm not sure," Belgarath replied. "We all know that she has a peculiar effect on Zakath, though. He tends to lose his grip on things every time he sees her. Belden wouldn't tell me exactly what he's got in mind, but he sounded disgustingly pleased with himself. Do you feel up to some theatricality this morning?"
"Not really, but I suppose I can manage something."
"You are supposed to goad Zakath a little. Not too much, mind, but push him into making some threats. That's when we are supposed to call Serratus. Don't be too obvious about it. Sort of lead him into it gradually."
The old man looked at Toth. "Keep your eyes on me when Geryon and Zakath start arguing. I'll cover my mouth and cough. That's when we will need your mistress."
Toth nodded. "Are we going to tell the others?"
Geryon asked.
Belgarath squinted.
"No," he decided. "Their reactions might be more natural if they don't know what's going on."
Durnik smiled slightly.
"I'd say that Belden isn't the only one with a flair for the dramatic."
"I used to be a professional storyteller, Durnik," Belgarath reminded him. "I can play an audience like a lute."
After the others had awakened and breakfast had been served, General Ataska came into the tent.
"His Imperial Majesty instructs that you make ready. You will be departing for Malzeth within the hour."
Geryon moved quickly to head that off.
"Tell His Imperial Majesty that we are not going any place until we finish the conversation we started yesterday."
Ataska looked momentarily startled, then recovered.
"People do not speak so to the Emperor, Your Majesty," he declared.
"He might find it refreshing, then."
Ataska drew himself up.
The Emperor is otherwise occupied at the moment.
Geryon leaned back in his chair and crossed his legs. We'll wait, he said flatly. That will be all, General. Ateska's face grew tight, then he bowed stiffly, turned, and went out without another word.
Geryon, Zenedra gasped. We are at Sakath's mercy, and you were being deliberately rude.
He hasn't been overly polite to me, Geryon shrugged. I told him, we are not going back to Malzeth, and he ignored me. It appears that sometimes it takes a bit to get his attention.
Polgara was looking narrowly at Geryon.
Then she turned to Belgarath. What are you two up to, father? She asked. He winked at her, but did not reply. It took Kalzakath approximately 2 minutes to arrive. He burst into the tent with his eyes wild and his face beet red.
What do you mean? He almost screamed at Geryon.
What do you mean? What do I mean?
I gave you an imperial command.
So? I'm not one of your subjects.
This is intolerable.
You'll get used to it. You should know by now that I always do what I set out to do. I thought I'd made that point when we left Malzeth. I told you we were going to Asheba, and that's exactly what we did. With some effort, the Emperor got himself under control.
I was trying to protect you and your friends, you idiot, he said from between clenched teeth. You were riding directly into Menga's path.
We didn't have any particular problem with Menga.
Ateska told me that you had killed him. I did not get the details, though.
Zakath seemed to have recovered his composure to some degree. Actually, I'm not the one who did it. Margravine Lassell killed him. Sakath looked with one raised eyebrow at the dimpled velvet.
His Majesty is perhaps overgenerous, she murmured, with a little curtsy. I had some help.
Help? From whom?
Zith, actually. Menga was very surprised.
Will someone please tell me what happened without all of this clever repartee?
It was really fairly simple, Your Majesty, Silk said smoothly. We were having a little disagreement with the Kandam and some others in Torek's old throne room at Asheba. Menga was shouting orders to his men, and Lysel pulled out Zith out of her bodice and threw the little green darling right into his face. Zith nipped him a few times. He stiffened up like a plank, and he was dead before he hit the floor.
You don't actually carry that snake down the front of your dress, do you?
Sakath asked Velvet incredulously.
How can you?
It took a bit of getting used to, she admitted,
placing one modest hand on her bodice.
It didn't really happen that way, did it?
Prince Keldar's description of what took place was fairly accurate, Your Imperial Majesty, Zadig assured him. Zith was very put out. I think she was asleep when the Margravine threw her at Menga, and being awakened suddenly always makes her cross.
As it turns out, Zakath, Menga was really one of the Kandam, and Irvan's chief underling, Belgarath said. Yes. So Ateska told me. That puts Irvan behind what was going on in Karanda, doesn't it?
Only marginally, Belgarath replied. Irvan is not sane enough to be behind much of anything. He is completely under the domination of a demon lord named Nahaz,
and consorting with demons usually unhinges a man's mind. Ervan is totally convinced that he is a god now.
If he is that mad, who is running his campaign here? Ataska said that his outflanking of the Dashivan army and their elephant cavalry was a stroke of tactical genius.
It is my guess that Nehaz is more or less in command, and demon lords pay very little attention to casualties. They also have ways of making people run very fast.
I have never gone to war with a demon lord before,
Sakath mused.
What is his objective?
The Sardian,
Geryon replied.
Everybody wants to get his hands on it, me included.
To raise a new god over Angarak?
That's its purpose, I suppose.
I don't think I'd like that. You liberated us from Torak, and I don't propose to see his replacement enthroned either at Melzeth or Malyaska.
Angarak does not need a god. It has me.
Who is your candidate?
I don't know yet. They haven't told me.
What am I going to do with you, Belgarion? Sakath sighed.
You are going to let us go so we can do what we are supposed to do. You might not like the idea of a new god, but I think you will find my choice a little more preferable to anything Zandramos or Ervan or Agachak might come up with.
Agachak?
The Hierarch of Rakurga. He is here in Meloria as well.
I will deal with him too, then. That still leaves you, I'm afraid.
I just told you what to do about me. A faint smile touched Zakath's lips.
I don't think I really like your proposal. You are a little undependable. What is your goal in all of this?
Belgaroth asked him.
I am going to restore order in Meloria, even if I have to depopulate whole districts to do it. Since this Sardian is the thing that's got everyone so agitated, I would guess that my best course would be to find it and destroy it.
Good,
Geryon said, rising to his feet. Let's go, then.
Oh, no, Your Majesty.
Sakath's tone was once again coldly imperial.
I don't trust you anymore. I made that mistake once already. I can eliminate at least one of the people trying to reach the Sardian by sending you and your friends back to Malzeth under heavy guard. Then I can concentrate on looking for the Sardian myself.
Where do you plan to start looking?
Geryon asked him bluntly. The conversation, he decided, had moved around to the point where the goading Belgaroth had suggested seemed to be in order.
You don't even know what you are looking for, and you haven't got the faintest idea of where to start. You are just floundering around.
I don't think I care for that, Belgaroth.
That's too bad. The truth is sometimes painful, isn't it?
And I suppose you do know where it is.
I can find out.
If you can, so can I, and I am sure you will give me a few clues.
Not a chance.
You will grow more cooperative once I put a few of your friends on the rack. I'll even let you watch.
You had better hire an expendable torturer, then. Haven't you realized yet just what I am capable of? And all this time I thought you were intelligent.
I think that's quite enough, Belgarion,
Zakath snapped.
Make ready. You are leaving for Malzeth. And to make sure you behave yourself, I am going to separate all of you people. That should give me plenty of hostages in the event you decide to do something rash.
I think that covers everything. This conversation is concluded.
Belgorath covered his mouth with one hand and coughed. Toth nodded and lowered his head. Zakath stepped back in startled amazement as a shimmering apparition suddenly appeared directly in front of him. He glared at Geryon.
"Is this some kind of trick?" he demanded.
"No tricks, Zakath," Geryon replied. "She has some things to tell you. I suggest that you listen."
"Wilt thou hear my words, Zakath?"
the glowing form of the blindfolded seeress of Kel asked him. Zakath's face was still taut with suspicion.
"What is it, Saradus?"
he asked bluntly.
"My time with thee must needs be short, Emperor of Menoria. I spoke to thee once concerning a crossroad in thy life. Thou hast reached that point now. Put aside thine imperious manner and submit willingly to the task which I must lay upon thee. Thou hast spoken here of hostages."
He drew himself up.
"A custom, Saradus," he told her. "It is a simple means of ensuring good behavior."
"Dost thou indeed feel so feeble that thou must threaten the innocent to impose thy will upon others?"
Her tone was lightly touched with scorn.
"Feeble? Me?"
"Why else wouldst thou choose so cowardly a course? But hear me well, Khal Zakath, for thy life hangs in the balance. In the instant that thou dost raise thy hand against the Child of Light, or any of his companions, thy heart shall burst, and thou shalt die between two breaths."
"So be it, then. I rule in Meloria. And to change or falter because of any threat, even yours, is to become as nothing in my own eyes. And I will not do that."
"Then shalt thou surely die. And in thy death shall thy mighty empire crumble into dust."
She said it with a dreadful finality. He stared at her, his pale face growing even more livid.
"Thou wilt not hear my warnings, Emperor of Meloria, so I will make thee an offer instead. If thou dost require a hostage, I will be thy hostage. The Child of Light doth know that should I depart from this life ere my task is complete, his quest will surely fail. What better restraint canst thou place upon him?"
"I will not threaten you, Holy Seeress," he said, sounding a bit less sure of himself.
"And why not, mighty Zakath?"
"It would not be appropriate," he said shortly. "Was that all you had to say to me? I have certain duties to attend to."
"They are of no moment. Thine only true duties are to me, and to the task which I shall lay upon thee. The completion of that task is the purpose of thy life. It was for that, and for that only, that thou wast born. Shouldst thou refuse it, thou wilt not live to see another winter."
"That's the second time you have threatened my life since you arrived, Saradus. Do you hate me so much?"
"I do not hate thee, Zakath, and I made no threats. I merely revealed unto thee that which fate has in store for thee. Wilt thou accept thy task?"
"Not until I know a little more about it."
"Very well, then. I will reveal unto thee the first part of thy task. Thou must come to me at Kel, where I shall submit to thee. I shall be thy hostage. But thou art also surely mine. Come thou then to Kel, with the Child of Light and his other chosen companions. For as hath been foretold since the beginning of days, thou art of their company.
But, she held up one slim hand.
Leave behind thee thy retinue, and thine army, and thy symbols of power. They will be of no use to thee.
She paused.
Or art thou fearful, O mighty Zakath, to go about in thy vast realm without thy soldiers clustered about thee, to compel the stubborn knee to bend, and to coerce the rebellious to submit to thy will?
Zakath flushed angrily. I fear nothing, holy Seeress, he replied in a cold voice. Not even death.
Death is a small thing, Khal Zakath. Methinks it is life which thou dost fear. As I have said, thou art my hostage, and I command thee to come to me at Kel, and there to take up thy burden.
The Emperor of Meloria began to tremble. Geryon knew this man, and he knew that Zakath would normally reject Seratus's imperious command instantly, but he appeared seized by some overpowering compulsion. His trembling grew more violent, and his pale face broke out in a sweat. Tiradus, despite her blindfolded eyes, seemed to be aware of the turmoil which had seized her hostage.
Thy choice is well made, Khal Zakath,
she declared.
Thou wilt submit to me willingly or with reluctance, but thou must submit, for it is thy destiny.
She drew herself up.
Speak now, Emperor of Meloria, for thy fate requires thine acceptance of it. Wilt thou come to me at Kel?
He seemed to choke on it.
I will come, he croaked.
So be it, then. Take thy foreordained place at Belgarion's side, and come to the holy city. There shall I instruct thee further in thy task, and tell thee why it is not merely thy life which doth hinge upon it, but the life of this world.
She turned slightly so that her blindfolded eyes seemed to be looking at Geryon.
Bring him to me, Child of Light,
she told him.
For all of this is a part of what must come to pass ere the final meeting.
She stretched out her hand to Toth in a gesture of longing, and then she vanished.
And now? We are 12, Sadi murmured.
The most recent recruit to their company, however, stood ashen-faced in the center of the tent, and Geryon was astonished to see unshed tears standing in the eyes of the Emperor of Meloria. Chapter 18.
The Empty One,
Arion said with a slight note of satisfaction in his voice.
It's almost complete now.
I don't quite follow you, Toddy confessed.
Seratus came to us at Rehan, the young man explained. She told us who would come with us to the place which is no more. I've been wondering who the Empty One would be. Now I know.
And how did she describe me? The eunuch asked.
Are you really sure you want to know?
I have a certain curiosity about it, yes.
She called you the man who is no man.
Tzadi winced.
That's direct enough, isn't it?
You did ask.
Tzadi sighed.
It's all right, Eriand. The procedure took place when I was a baby, so I've never known what it might be like to be different. Actually, I find all this interest in that particular function slightly amusing.
Mine is a much less complicated way of life.
Why did they do it to you?
Sadi shrugged, rubbing his hand over his shaved scalp.
My mother was poor. It was the only gift she could give me.
Gift?
It gave me the chance for employment in Queen Salmisra's palace. Otherwise, I'd have probably been a street beggar like the rest of my family.
Are you all right?
Geryon asked the ashen-faced Zakath.
Just leave me alone, Geryon,
Zakath muttered.
Why don't you let me deal with it, dear?
Polgara suggested to Geryon.
This is very difficult for him. Well, I can understand that. It didn't come too easily for me, either. And we broke it to you gently. Saradus didn't have time to be gentle. I'll talk with him. All right, Aunt Paul.
Geryon walked away and left her alone with the shaken Zakath. This particular turn of events gave him some misgivings. Although he liked the Malorian Emperor personally, he could foresee any number of difficulties arising from the inclusion of this man in their party. Quite often in the past, their very survival had depended entirely upon the absolute oneness of purpose of every member of the group, and Zakath's motives were never really clear.
Geryon,
the voice in his mind said wearily,
don't tamper with things you don't understand. Zakath has to go with you, so you might as well get used to the idea.
But no buts. Just do it.
Geryon muttered a few oaths under his breath.
And don't swear at me either.
This is an absurdity,
Zakath burst out, slumping into a chair.
No, Polgara disagreed. You just have to get used to looking at the world in a different way, that's all. For most people, that is not necessary. You are a member of a very select group now, and different rules apply.
Rules have never applied to me, Lady Polgara. I make my own rules.
Not anymore.
Why me? Zakath demanded. That's always the first question they ask, Belgarath said dryly to Silk.
Has anybody ever answered it?
Not to my knowledge, no.
We can instruct you as we go along, Polgara assured Zakath. The only important thing right now is whether or not you intend to honor your commitment to Saradus.
Of course I do. I gave my word. I don't like it, but I don't have any choice. How can she possibly manipulate me the way she does?
She has very strange powers.
She does it by sorcery, you mean?
No, by truth.
Did you understand any of that gibberish she was speaking?
Some of it, but certainly not all. I told you that we look at the world in a different way. The seers look at it in yet another. No one who does not share their vision can fully understand it.
Zakath stared at the floor.
I suddenly feel very helpless, he admitted. And I don't like the feeling. I have been rather effectively dethroned, you know. This morning, I was the emperor of the largest nation on Earth. This afternoon, I am going to be a vagabond.
You might find it refreshing, Silk told him lightly.
Shut up, Kaldar,
Zakath said almost absently. He looked back at Polgara.
You know something rather peculiar?
What's that?
Even if I had not given my word, I would still have to go to Kel. It's almost like a compulsion.
I feel as if I am being driven. And my driver is a blindfolded girl who is hardly more than a child.
There are rewards, she told him.
Such as what?
Who knows? Happiness, perhaps. He laughed ironically.
Happiness has never been a driving ambition of mine, Lady Bulgra. Not for a long time now.
You may have to accept it anyway, she smiled. We are not allowed to choose our rewards any more than we are our tasks. Those decisions are made for us.
Are you happy?
Why, yes. As a matter of fact, I am.
He sighed.
And why so great a sigh, Kalzakath? He held up his thumb and forefinger, spread an inch or so apart.
I was that close to becoming the master of the entire world.
Why would you want to be? He shrugged.
No one has ever done it before. And power has its satisfactions.
You will find other satisfactions, I am sure, she smiled, laying one hand on his shoulder.
It's settled? Belgarath asked the Malorian. Nothing is ever really settled, Belgarath,
Zakath replied.
Not until we are in our graves. But yes, I will go to Kel with you. Why don't you send for Ateska, then? You will need to tell him where you are going, so he can at least cover our rear. I don't like having people sneak up behind me. Has Irvon made it across the Maganyas yet? Well, that's very hard to say. Have you looked outside today, Belgarath? The tent door is guarded, and Ateska's soldiers don't encourage sightseeing. The fog is so thick. You could walk on it. Irvon could be any place out there.
Polgar arose and quickly crossed to the tent flap. She opened it, and one of the guards outside said something to her sharply. Oh, don't be silly, she told him. Then she took several deep breaths and closed the flap. It's not natural, father, she said soberly. It doesn't smell right.
Grolums?
I think so, yes. Probably Kandam trying to conceal Irvon's forces from Ateska's patrol boats. They should be able to cross the Magan without much difficulty.
Once they get across, the trip to Kel might just turn into a horse race. I will talk to Ateska, Zakath said. He might be able to delay them a bit.
He looked speculatively at the old man.
I know why I am going to Kel. But why are you? I have to read the Malorian Gospels to find out what our ultimate destination is. You mean you don't know? Not yet, no. I know what it's called, though. They keep calling it the place which is no more. Belgarath, that is pure gibberish. I did not come up with the name, so don't blame me. Why didn't you say something back at Malzeth? I have a copy of the Gospels in my library. In the first place, I did not know about it when I was at Malzeth. I only found out recently. In the second place, your copy would not have done me any good. They are all different, I'm told, and the only one that contains the passage I need is at Kel. It all sounds very complicated. It is. These things usually are.
Zakath went to the door of the tent and spoke briefly with one of the guards there. Then he came back.
I have sent for Ateska and Braedor.
He smiled a bit ruefully.
I would not be surprised if they objected rather violently to this whole thing.
Don't give them time to object,
Garion advised.
They are both Malsines, Garion,
Zakath pointed out.
Mersines object to things out of habit.
He frowned.
Speaking of that, why did you go to Mersina? Wasn't it a bit out of your way?
We were following Zandramas,
Geryon replied. Why did she go there?
She had to pick up your cousin, Archduke Othrath.
That silly ass. What for?
She took him to Hemel and crowned him Emperor of Meloria.
She did what?
Zakath's eyes bulged. She needs an Angarak king with her when she gets to the place which is no more. As I understand it, the coronation ceremony had a certain validity.
Not after I get my hands on Othrath, it won't.
Zakath's face was scarlet with anger.
There was another reason for our going to Mersina, although we didn't know it at the time,
Belgarath said.
There was an unmutilated copy of the Ashabin oracles there. I had to read that in order to find out that our next step is the trip to Kel. I'm following a trail that was laid down for me thousands of years ago.
Ateska and Braedor entered.
You sent for us, Your Majesty,
Ateska said with a crisp salute.
Yes,
Zakath replied. He looked at the two of them speculatively.
Please, listen carefully. Try not to argue with me, he instructed.
Oddly, he said it not so much in the tone of an imperial command, but rather as a man appealing to two old friends.
There has been a change of plans. Certain information has come into my possession, and it is absolutely imperative that we not interfere with Belgarion and his friends. Their mission is vital to the security of Meloria.
Braedor's eyes came alight with curiosity.
Shouldn't I perhaps be briefed on this matter, Your Imperial Majesty? State security is my responsibility, after all.
No, Braedor,
Zakath said regretfully.
I am afraid not. It might require too great an adjustment in your thinking. You are not ready for that. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure I am either. At any rate, Belgarion and these others absolutely must go to Delasia.
One other thing. I will be going with them. Ateska stared incredulously at his emperor. Then with some effort he got himself under control.
I'll notify the commander of the Imperial Guard, Your Majesty. They will be ready to leave within the hour.
Don't bother, Zakath told him. They won't be going with us. I'll be going with Belgarion, alone.
Alone?
Ateska exclaimed.
Your Majesty, that's unheard of.
Zakath smiled wanly.
You see, he said to Geryon. What did I tell you?
General, Belgarath said to Ateska.
Karl Zakath is simply following orders. I am sure you can understand that. He was told not to bring any troops along. Troops would not do him any good where we are going anyway.
Orders?
Ateska said in amazement.
Who has the authority to give His Majesty orders?
It is a long story, Ateska, the old man told him, and we are pressed for time.
Your Imperial Majesty, Braedor said diffidently. If you are going to Delasia, that means you'll have to cross the whole of Darshiva. But I remind you that Darshiva is hostile territory at the moment. Is it wise to risk the Imperial person under such circumstances? Might not an escort, at least as far as the border, be prudent?
Zakath looked at Belgarath. The old man shook his head.
Let's just do it the way we were told to.
Sorry, Braedor.
said Zakath. We can't take an escort with us. I think I'll need some armor, though, and a sword.
Your Majesty has not held a sword for years,
Ateska objected. Belgerian can give me some instruction, Zakath shrugged. I am sure I will pick it up again. Now then, Irvan's going to cross the Magan. I have it on very good authority that there won't be very much we can do to stop him. I imagine that the Dashivan army won't be very far behind him, and they have elephant cavalry with them. I want you to keep all of those people off of my back. Delay Irvan long enough for the Dashivans to catch up with him. After that, they can annihilate each other for all I care. Once those two armies are fully engaged, pull back your forces. Don't get any more of my soldiers killed than you absolutely have to.
Ateska frowned.
Then the policy we discussed at Magarin is no longer in force?
Zakath shrugged.
Policy changes from time to time. At this point, I am militantly indifferent about who wins an unimportant battle in this corner of the world. That may give you some idea of just how vital Belgerian's mission is.
He looked at Geryon.
Does that cover everything?
Except for the demons, Geryon replied. They are here in Darshiva, too.
Zakath frowned.
I had forgotten about them. They will come to Irvan's aid, won't they?
Nehaz will, Belgarath told him. Morja will help the Darshivans.
You're going a little fast for me.
When Irvan showed up with Nehaz in tow, Zandramas raised a demon lord of her own, the old man explained. She went a little far afield for him, actually. Morja is lord of the demons in Morinland. He and Nehaz are evenly matched, and they have hated each other for all of eternity.
Then it still appears to be a stalemate. Both sides have an army, and they both have demons.
Demons are grossly unselective in their choices of victims, Zakath,
Bulgara said.
They will kill anything that moves, and your own armies here in Darshiva.
I had not thought of that, he conceded.
He looked around.
Any suggestions?
Belgarath and Bulgara exchanged a long look.
I suppose it's worth a try, the old sorcerer shrugged. He's not fond of Angarax. But he is even less fond of demons. I think we will have better luck with him if we go outside the camp, though.
Exactly who are we talking about?
Zakath asked curiously.
Aldur, Belgarath replied.
He scratched at his cheek.
Would it be safe to tell him that you would be very reluctant to go with us if your army was in danger? He asked.
I think you could say that, yes.
Zakath's eyes widened.
Are you trying to say you can actually summon a god?
He asked incredulously.
I am not sure if summon is exactly the right word. We can talk with him, though. We will see what he says.
You're not really going to try subterfuge, are you, father?
Polgara asked the old man.
Aldur knows what I'm doing, he replied. I could not deceive him if I tried.
Zakath's reluctance just gives us a starting point for the conversation. Aldur is reasonable, but he has always liked a good argument. You should know that, Paul. He helped to educate you, after all. Let's see if we can talk with him.
Would it be all right if I came along?
Eriond asked.
I need to talk with him, too.
Belgarath looked a bit surprised at that. He looked for a moment as if he were about to refuse, but then he seemed to change his mind.
Suit yourself, he shrugged. Ateska, could you have your guards escort us as far as that
ditch around the outside of the camp. We will go on from there alone. Ataska spoke with the guards at the door of the tent, and the three were allowed to leave without challenge.
I would give a great deal to witness this meeting, Braedor murmured. Have you ever seen Aldor, Prince Keldar?
A couple of times, yes, Silk replied in an offhand manner. Once in the Vale, and then again at Tol Mishrak, when he and the other gods came to claim the body of Torak after Geryon killed him.
I'd imagine that he took a certain satisfaction in that, Zakath said. Aldur and Torak were sworn enemies.
No, Geryon disagreed sadly. No one took any pleasure in the death of Torak. He and Aldur were brothers. I think Ul grieved the most, though. Torak was his son, after all.
There seem to be some fairly huge gaps in Angorak theology, Zakath mused. I don't think the Grolems even admit the existence of Ul.
They would, if they ever saw him, Silk said.
Is he really that impressive looking? Braedor asked.
Oh, it's not so much the way he looks, Silk shrugged. It's the sense of his presence. It's overwhelming.
He was very nice to me,
Zinedra objected. Everybody's nice to you, Zinedra. You have that effect on people.
Most of the time, Geryon corrected.
I suppose we'd better start packing, Durnik suggested. I think Belgarath's going to want to leave just as soon as he gets back.
He looked at Ataska.
Do you suppose we could get a few things from your stores? It's a long way to Kel, and I don't think we'll be able to pick up much in the way of supplies here in Dar Shiva. Of course, goodman Durnik, the general replied. I'll make out a list of the things we'll need, then.
As Durnik sat down at the table to draw up his list, Ataska gave Silk a penetrating look.
We never did get the chance to talk about your recent venture in the commodities market, did we, Your Highness? Are you considering a second career, Ataska?
Zakath asked him.
Hardly, Your Majesty. I am quite happy as a soldier. Prince Keldar recently did a bit of speculation in this year's bean crop. The Bureau of Military Procurement went into a state of anguished consternation when they found out his asking price.
Braedor suddenly chuckled.
Good for you, Keldar.
That is a peculiar attitude, Braedor, Zakath reproved him. How would you like it if I took Prince Keldar's excess profits from your budget?
Actually, Your Majesty, Keldar's venture didn't cost your treasury a thing. The members of the Bureau of Military Procurement are the greatest unhanged scoundrels in the Empire. Some years ago, while you were busy in Tor Murgos, they sent you a rather innocuous-looking document having to do with standardizing the prices of all the items they purchased for the army.
I remember it, vaguely. Their argument seemed to be that it would provide a basis for long-range planning.
That was on the surface, Your Majesty. In actuality, fixing those prices provided them with a golden opportunity to line their own pockets. They could buy at below the fixed price, sell to the army at a legal rate, and keep the difference for themselves.
What is the fixed rate on beans?
10 half-crowns per hundredweight, Your Majesty.
That doesn't seem unreasonable.
When they are buying at 3 half-crowns?
Zakath stared at him. Braedor held up one hand.
However, by law, they have to sell to the army at 10, no matter what price they have to pay. So they have to make up the difference out of their own pockets.
That might account for the anguish General Ateska mentioned.
Zakath suddenly grinned a wolfish sort of grin.
What price were you asking, Keldar?
I sold out to the Melsine Consortium at 15.
The little man shrugged, buffing his nails on the front of his tunic.
I'd imagine that they added a few points to that. A reasonable profit, you understand.
And you controlled the entire bean crop?
I certainly tried.
I feel fairly sure that Your Majesty will receive several letters of resignation from members of the Bureau, Brador said. I would advise not accepting them until after all accounts are settled.
I will keep that in mind, Brador.
Zakath looked speculatively at Silk.
Tell me, Keldar, how much would you take to suspend operations here in Meloria?
I don't really believe Your Majesty's treasury has that much money, Silk replied blandly. Besides, I have become a sort of necessity. The Melorian economy was stagnant until I got here. You could almost say that I'm working for you.
Did that make any sense?
Zakath asked Brador.
Yes, Your Majesty, Brador sighed. In a peculiar way, it does. Our tax revenues have been rising steadily since Keldar and his scruffy-looking partner began doing business here in the Empire.